Jesus' surprisingly simple strategy for changing the world. This is the Looking for More podcast, connecting Christians who feel disconnected from the church, with your host, Shirley DeMerchant, who can be surprisingly simple in her own way. This is episode 13. Welcome, and thank you for joining me for this episode. In last week's episode, I talked about a strategy that some Christians are using to change American culture, and I shared my opinion that I thought that strategy was doomed to fail. In today's episode, I want to look at Jesus' strategy to change the world. It is surprisingly simple. Four words describe it, and they all begin with the letter S. Small, slow and subtle, and service. Let's begin with the first one. Jesus chose only 12 disciples. He could have chosen more. At times, though, he appeared to discourage others from becoming his disciples. He discouraged people who indicated an interest in following him. This happened most often when the crowds seemed to be getting large. For example, in Matthew chapter 8, verses 18 through 22, we read this. When Jesus saw the crowd around him, he gave orders to cross to the other side of the lake. Then a teacher of the law came to him and said, "Teacher, I will follow you wherever you go." Jesus replied, "Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head." Another disciple said to him, "Lord, first let me go and bury my father." But Jesus told him, "Follow me, and let the dead bury their own dead." Also in Luke chapter 14, verses 25 through 27, it says, "Large crowds were traveling with Jesus, and turning to them, he said, 'If anyone comes to me and does not hate father and mother, wife and children, brothers and sisters, yes, even their own life, such a person cannot be my disciple. And whoever does not carry their cross and follow me cannot be my disciple.'" In John chapter 6, Jesus said some very difficult things that are quite difficult to understand. And these words cause people to leave. He said, "Whoever eats my flesh and drinks my blood remains in me, and I in them. Just as the living Father sent me, and I live because of the Father, so the one who feeds on me will live because of me. This is the bread that came down from heaven. Your ancestors ate manna and died, but whoever feeds on this bread will live forever." On hearing it, many of his disciples said, "This is a hard teaching. Who can accept it?" And then in verse 66, "From this time, many of his disciples turned back and no longer followed him." Jesus' approach is contrary to the way that most of us think about things. For those of us who blog and podcast, we're looking not to get smaller, but to get bigger. We want to gain listeners and followers in order to increase our influence by getting our message out to more people. For those of you in marketing, you know how true this is. And in discussions of church growth, it is usually about increasing numbers. It seems that that is a reasonable and logical approach, but not for Jesus. His approach was to keep the number of his initial followers small. This really shouldn't surprise us when we think of other examples in the Bible where God did great things through small numbers. I think of Gideon in Judges chapter 7. We read, "The Lord said to Gideon, 'You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into their hands, or Israel would boast against me, saying, My own strength has saved me. Now announce to the army, anyone who trembles with fear may turn back and leave Mount Gilead.' So 22,000 men left, while 10,000 remained. But the Lord said to Gideon, 'There are still too many men. Take them down to the water, and I will thin them out for you there.' So Gideon took the men down to the water. There the Lord told him, 'Separate those who lap the water with their tongues as a dog laps from those who kneel down to drink.' 300 of them drank from cupped hands, lapping like dogs. All the rest got down on their knees to drink. The Lord said to Gideon, 'With the 300 men that lapped, I will save you and give the Midianites into your hands. Let all the others go home.'" God shrank Gideon's army down to 300 men, down from 32,000. Gideon's heart must have sunk. But God had his reasons, which he expressed earlier in the passage. He did it to keep the men from boasting. Jesus' reason for limiting the size of his first followers, I believe, was for the same reason. There was nothing impressive about the number of disciples or the quality of disciples from a human point of view. But these men did extraordinary things. You can't credit them because of their large number or their education. All the praise must go to God, and that is the goal, to rely on and recognize God's power to accomplish God's work. We often forget that in our endeavors to do God's will. God desires that men and women see his glory and his power. So the first word to describe Jesus' strategy is small. The second, actually, are two words that I've put together, slow and subtle. Jesus, when he talked about spiritual growth, often used parables, and in these parables, he used things that were known but also acted slow and in a subtle way. For example, Jesus often talked about seeds. He pointed out that a seed planted in the ground grows without anyone doing anything, and the growth is invisible to the naked eye. But there's still growth. It's only visible when the plant breaks through the soil. Jesus talked also about how a small seed can produce a large tree that provides shelter, or plants that produce 100-fold. Jesus also talked about yeast, something that is not very large, it's hard to distinguish, and invisible to the naked eye once it's in that bread. It's not noticeable until the bread rises. Jesus also talked about salt and said that his followers were to be salt in the world. Salt seems quite insignificant, but when it is placed in the right place and given time to work, it can have a dramatic impact. Jesus chose these very ordinary things to explain spiritual truths. He transforms people by his spirit and his power that often work in slow, small, subtle ways that often are hard to notice at first. When Jesus explained the new birth to Nicodemus in John chapter 3, he described the Holy Spirit like the wind. In John 3 verse 8, Jesus said, "The wind blows wherever it pleases. You hear its sound, but you cannot tell where it comes from or where it is going. So it is with everyone born of the Spirit." I have taken so much comfort from that verse. It is a reminder that God often is at work, even if I can't see it. Working in ways that are slow and subtle is quite a challenge for us. Most of us want quick action. We want to see change now. We want to see the evidence that God is at work. But God is always at work, but He is never in a hurry. I've said that God often works in ways that are slow and subtle. I know that is not always the case. Sometimes God does work in very powerful and dramatic ways. Sometimes this happens in dramatic conversions like that of the Apostle Paul, and in healings and other miracles. God is certainly free to use His power whenever and however He chooses. But I find even when there has been a dramatic event, God usually has been working behind the scenes in ways that are slow and subtle. So three words to describe Jesus' approach in transforming the world are small, slow, and subtle. And the fourth word is service. This is an important part of Jesus' teaching, the importance of acts of kindness and service. Jesus told the parable of the Good Samaritan as an example of what it means to love your neighbor. Jesus taught that we are to love not just our neighbor, but even our enemies. He said we are to care for the poor and the outcasts. This is made most clear in Matthew 26, in the passage that often is referred to as the sheep and the goats. We are reminded of the importance of acts of service in God's eyes. In that passage, we are told that to those who fed the hungry, gave water to the thirsty, cared for the stranger, clothed the poor, cared for the sick, and visited those in prison, the Lord's response was, "Whatever you did for one of the least of these brothers of mine, you did for me." And the opposite was also true, that when those things were not done, they were not done to the Lord. Jesus himself demonstrated his commitment to serving others. One of the last experiences that Jesus had with his disciples before he was crucified was sharing a meal together. Before that meal, though, he took the time to wash the feet of each of his disciples. It was a very humble act, and it made the disciples very uncomfortable. They knew that they should have been serving him, not him serving them. Jesus, after washing their feet, told them to go and to serve others just as he had served them. Jesus' ultimate act of service, though, was giving his life on the cross. He explains his motivation in Mark 10:45 when he said that he came to serve, not to be served, and to give his life as a ransom for many. Jesus demonstrated that loving service heals. It heals brokenness, it restores, and it redeems. Jesus' strategy can be described by the words small, slow and subtle, and service. That describes his strategy, but the vehicle God has chosen for this strategy for changing the world is the church. Yes, the church. The church, with all its flaws and frustrations and limitations, seems to be a poor choice for changing the world, but that is exactly what God has in mind. You might be wondering, well, can't we change the world as individuals? working apart from the church? Well, sure we can, but the impact will not be as great. God has given spiritual gifts to the local church, and when those gifts are exercised in unity, there is power to transform individuals and communities. I can use my gift for preaching and teaching and impact some, but it's much more impactful when I work in conjunction with those who have other gifts, like the gift of administration, or wisdom, or hospitality, or showing mercy, or the gift of giving. It's just like God to use a weak instrument like the church to carry out his purpose to transform the world. You can see how different Jesus' strategy is from those who seek political power and positions in society to bring about change. I've been reading a book called If Jesus Were Mayor, written by Bob Moffat. I'll put a link in the show notes. This is what it says. The church is far more important for the transformation of a society than the president of the nation, its legislators, or its business leaders. The principal and most strategic institution God appointed to carry out his big agenda is not found in the political or economic spheres. Instead, it is the church. There is some food for thought. Well, our time is up for today. I want to thank you for joining me for this episode, and I want to encourage you to perhaps think differently about the church. You might want to visit your local church if you have not been doing so, and let me know what you think of the ideas in this podcast. You can do so by going to our Facebook page or sending me an email. You'll find the links below. My prayer for you, my friend, is that you will experience deeper faith and greater joy. Talk to you next week.